Hey everyone, welcome back to all my listeners. This is episode number 5 of season 8. Today is Wednesday, February 1st, 2023. My name is Sonal Patel, and this is the Paint the Medical Picture podcast series. Now, all right, you guys, it's a brand new month. It looks like 2023 is on full speed ahead, am I right? It feels like the fastest month ever. So, all right, you guys, let's get right into the day. Now, I've got a fabulous guest, another one with me on the show today, and please do enjoy those many, many chirping birds that she has in her location. I think you'll enjoy the sounds as much as I did. It's just so peaceful and tranquil where she was sitting and having her conversation with me with our cups of coffee. It was lovely. Anyway, so I'm going to be rolling out that red carpet today for a thoughtful and insightful medical billing company owner, Pam Vanderbilt. And I thought we could be spared, right, another CBR in 2023. I think all of you guys thought that as well, right? Because I've been kind of silent on CBRs, but haha, the joke is on all of us because today's the day. I'm going to be diving into the very first comparative billing report, CBR, for 2023 on chiropractic manipulative treatments of the spine. And of course, I'm going to go ahead and round out today's episode in Spark with a remarkable quote on creativity by Oprah Winfrey. If you guys have checked me out on LinkedIn, you know I'm all about compliance and protecting our physicians and our valued healthcare professionals when it comes to the business of medicine. I hope this week with me brings you enough to take back to your organizations, to want to dive in deeper, to use my tips and best practices to ensure success. I hope this podcast will help you boost the quality of documentation capture and improve coding accuracy as you help all your providers paint the medical picture. If you like what you're hearing, please go ahead and hit that subscribe button now so you don't miss another episode. Please write in a review and kindly drop me a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to my podcast. I'd really love your support. And as always, a friendly disclaimer. Remember, I'm bringing you the news, current healthcare industry news, my compliance tips, and my compliance recommendations based on my over 12 years of experience in front office, in back end, in coding, and in billing for multi-specialty physicians, in compliance, and in auditing for both E&M and surgical operative reports. These are my opinions alone and are not to be construed as legal advice. So, let's get into a very special newsworthy that features my guest today, Pam Vanderbilt. I'm so excited for today's session with you, Pam. So glad that you're here with my listeners. Now, Pam helps to ensure that her clients maintain sound systems for all aspects of their coding and documentation, as well as rev cycle management. She's also an instructor for the National Alliance of Medical Auditing Specialists, or NAMIS. Pam draws upon more than 2 decades of experience in healthcare, and her extensive work in auditing and revenue cycle analysis proves helpful time and time again for her clients. Whether she's analyzing documentation to ensure it meets medical necessity requirements or repairing rev cycle issues that are affecting financial performance, Pam enjoys every single aspect of her work. She finds it especially rewarding when her clients or auditing boot camp students have a light bulb moment and see how their work positively contributes to the financial performance of a practice. Pam is an active member of NAMIS as well as the AAPC, and she holds several credentials. She is also the 2023 president of the Ocala, Florida AAPC chapter. Pam resides in Ocala, Florida, and she enjoys spending time with her husband, 2 grown children, and grandchildren. Pam calls herself a Florida girl at heart, and when she's not enjoying time educating all of her providers and students, you can find her on the beach. Oh my goodness, Pam. Wow. Thank you so much for being here today, and I love seeing you in Florida. I wish I was there. Looks so warm and cozy to me anyway, but I think you told me that it was a bit cold, right?
It's a little nippy here today. It's about 53 degrees. So by Florida standards, it's very cold.
Exactly. Well, welcome. I'm so glad that you are here with us today. Now, you know what? That bio, right? And that experience that I alluded to in your bio is fantastic, right? Because in this little niche, it really does take a lot of work to gain that experience. So with all of those credentials that I know you also have, I want you to tell the audience a bit about that in a moment or two, right? Because I really think that's going to help the audience understand all of the possibilities that you can gain in this space, right? That we can obtain credentials, that we should be digging deep into finding out what we want, where we'd like to go, right? And do we actually need all of these various specialty credentials if we don't, for example, say we know that we're very strong in cardiology, for example, right? So do we need that extra certification? But regardless, I'm simply thrilled that you're here, right? And, you know, I do tend to enjoy planning how to fit my guests into the podcast schedule, right? So I wanted to let my audience know that you and I actually met 2 years ago, right? For the first time at the NAMIS conference. And then we just met again recently at the NAMIS conference yet again in December in Savannah, Georgia. So I thought, since we just saw each other, now is the most appropriate time for me to bring you on so you can actually share with everybody your journey, right? All of the steps it took for you to get here in this particular space, right? And what inspired you to begin with, to get into this line of work? I'd love to hear some more.
Thank you so much. I kind of got into healthcare by accident. My parents are hospital administrators. My grandfather wishes that my mother was a doctor, and she very well could have been if she wanted to be. But the clinical side of healthcare held no interest for me. And I just didn't have any understanding what healthcare, if you weren't clinical, what healthcare really meant. After my second child got to the age of being in school, I was looking for something to do besides just watching soap operas during the day. Growing up in the medical community, of course, we had a lot of friends who were medical providers. One of the practices needed a switchboard operator.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, why not?
Right.
And so that's literally how I started my journey. My office was in the billing office for this practice. There were times that the phones were incredibly busy. There were times that they were so silent and I was just kind of twiddling my thumbs going, okay, what am I going to do? And so I went out to the girls in the billing, you know, and said, give me something to do. And so back in the day, I'm going to age myself a little bit here, but if you've been in the industry for long enough, you will recognize medical manager. And that was the system that we used at the time. And they printed out a request for review, which was basically an aging report based on insurance. Right. And in those days, I could call up Blue Cross Blue Shield of Florida, and there were the same four or five ladies that answered the phone. Wow. And I would call them. Basically, my instructions were ask them why we didn't get paid.
Right.
And because I didn't have any other knowledge at that point. Right. And so I did. And they would explain. And I learned about Modifier 25, and I learned about bundling in large part from that experience talking to these wonderful ladies at Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you know, and they were only supposed to do five claims per call. But if they were slow, they'd stay on the phone until another call came into the queue. And so I don't remember what their names are. I really wish I did, because I looking back on it retrospectively, understand just how valuable that time that I was talking to them was. And then, you know, eventually a position opened at the front desk, and, you know, we were still on encounter forms, and he and King dated at the front desk. And I moved into that position and, you know, just slowly progressed my way through various other non-clinical positions in the medical office until I was in practice administration. But my focus always went back to that revenue cycle piece, regardless of what I was doing. You know, being an administrator and taking care of the bills and payroll taxes and all of that. Yeah, not so much fun in my
head. Right. Kind of stressful.
It was
right?
A necessary evil, you know. But okay, how come this insurance company didn't pay us for this? Or where are our funds? What's happening? You know, watching those problems, monitoring them, has always really been near and dear to my heart. So I continued to move through different medical offices, different positions, and different specialties. So had some exposure to OBGYN is where I started on the switchboard. But neurology, family practice, urgent care, you know, just kind of moved around a little bit. And then in 2009, I was working for a very specialized vascular surgeon. He only did arterial vascular surgery, but he was retiring. And so I was kind of dabbling a little bit and doing billing for a practice that I had been the administrator before on the side, and was trying to make a decision. Okay, do I want to go full-time on my own, or do I like the comfort of the W-2 and, you know, somebody else taking care of all of that? And I really kind of at that point was not comfortable. I wasn't trusting in the revenue that would come in and my ability to market myself and my services. So I did start looking for a job. But at that time, I also reconnected on Facebook with my high school boyfriend. And he was living in Atlanta, and my children were both out of high school at the time. And it was just one of those, do I really have to stay in Ocala? And so I expanded my job search, and don't even remember applying for the job that I ultimately got, but I a orthopedic practice in Atlanta reached out to me for an interview. And I went up and interviewed, and, you know, throughout the course of my career up until then, you know, maybe 2 years at a job, and that was it. But I went in as their, they called it a funky title, but it was basically their director of the revenue cycle, and worked there for 9 years. So my time there was absolutely fabulous, because this was a practice that taught me two very important lessons. Number one, patient care comes first. And not that it wasn't kind of in the back of my head, but it was that was their purpose. And it was on the tip of your tongue all the time. Patient care comes first. And then the second thing is education is important. And I think we all understand the importance of education. And a lot of employers will talk about the importance of education, but this practice put their money where their mouth was.
Nice.
And they paid for education, not just for myself, but also for my staff. Over the course of the 9 years that I was there, in exceedingly high dollar amounts. So although I was very proficient at coding, I was not a certified coder at the time, and they paid for me to go take a boot camp and take the exam. They paid for my ICD-10 training as we were making that transition. And not just training for my knowledge and to teach my staff, but they actually paid for me to do train the trainer so that I could use that knowledge to train others outside of the practice.
Right.
So, you know, it was just a super valuable time. In all of that is when I was at an AAPC conference And Namus had a booth there, and I put my name in and won a conference attendance that at their next conference, which just happened to be in Atlanta the following year. So that's kind of where I got clicked with Namus, and that education, that knowledge and understanding and the way that they present, spoke to something in me because it was at a higher level. Mm-hmm. It wasn't just coding. It was the auditing. It was the compliance. And I did not know it at the time, but Shannon had such a passion for the nuances of evaluation and management services that spoke to my soul. Mm-hmm. And so we just really clicked on that level. And so that ultimately became me going to work for Doctors Management, which is the parent company of Namus, and being able to expand into the teaching arena, which until then, I did not know how much I absolutely loved, and I can't live without. And so I own my own billing and consulting company, and I enjoy what I do with that, but my absolute passion is doing the education piece. And sometimes that's just within the scope of having a conversation with a provider and saying, this is why 25 modifier is not appropriate, you know, or whatever it might be. When that light bulb goes off, that teaching moment, I got it. And so that's kind of how I got to where I am now.
Well, that is just an incredible journey, Pam. Incredible. So, you know, while I was listening to you talk about all of the various positions you took and all of the really critical times in our coding world that you went through, especially that transition from, you know, ICD-9 to 10, I know I had lived that as well. It's basically when I started my career. Oh, right. Wow. So I really value, you know, mastering ICD-9. And then, you know, when you are able to have an employer really help you transition and help the education process, right? Make sure you pass all of the modules for ICD-10, right? All of that happened a long time ago. So critical, so important. So I heard that loud and clear, that organizations, even back in that time period, were few and far between, but they did embrace education, right? Which is exactly what you and I share in common here today in 2023, right? When we saw all of our colleagues at Namus, you talked about Shannon DeConda, right? The president of Namus. She's amazing. I remember when I sat for my CPMA, when I was studying for the coursework in that, I fell in love with the material, right? Which she developed, the examination and the course modules to help you pass that CPMA. So yeah, I was inspired by her, even though I did not know her at the time, back in 2014 when I obtained that credential. But I know her now. And yeah, she is absolutely amazing. And the nuances and the fine detail that she, you know, implores in her auditors, right, on how to better look at the documentation to then help educate the providers on what needs a little bit of tweaking here or there, right, to help secure that appropriate reimbursement. So yeah, every step along your path is riveting. So I hope people in my audience can understand, you know, all of the different steps that you can take to get your foot in the door. Absolutely. So you started at Switchboard. Yep. Everybody has to start somewhere, right?
Exactly.
You won't necessarily be a coder right away. And I think I've said this on my podcast with numerous guests or on other podcasts that I've been on, but we all tend to share a similar journey, that we might not land a specific quote unquote coding job as our first job, but you have to be open to the idea of you know, stepping out. And you can work at the switchboard, right? You can be an operator at the insurance company, for example. You can be on that call system there. You can be at the front office for the physician's office. Pick up the phone there. There's many different ways you can be a patient greeter in the hospital system if you would like that. There's so many different things. Prior authorization representatives are in need. There's so many different ways. And then through that networking, once you're inside the practice or the hospital, you can then leverage yourself and make yourself known that, hey, she has her certification. She can easily transition to working as a coder, you know, eventually. So I think these are really good points that you bring out from your own personal journey that I know people can, you know, find a connection with. So I really appreciate hearing that. And I agree with you. Everybody does get scared, right? To eventually, when the time is right, step out on their own, right? And develop their own billing company and do things on their own, but still take all of those valuable lessons learned from the greater organizations and the greater employers that you served in your past, right? You can take all of that knowledge with you. So I applaud that. It's amazing and fantastic. Fantastic stuff, Pam.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. I love it. All right. So, right. Let's go back to you're working for yourself now at mm-hmm. your own company, which is called Knowledge Tree Billing. Love that name. Love that name. Right. So can you please share with the audience and me, right? What is it that makes the biggest impact in your opinion, right? In working for yourself. So what is like the greater mission statement, right? For Knowledge Tree Billing, and what types of services or solutions do you offer at your own company that can help so many?
So there are a lot of billing companies out there. And my experience with the majority of those other billing companies is that they are just that. They are a third party. They're not part of the practice. Okay. They literally churn charges out, post money, and maybe do some appeals. And I just, from my own personal background and working on in revenue cycle from the practice side of it, I don't think that's an effective way. Mm-hmm. It's not a solution. Your billing company needs to be an integral part of your practice. And so when I talk to potential new clients, I tell them first thing, we are not your billing company. We are your billing department.
Nice.
And I may be sitting in Florida and you may be out in California, but as far as your patients know, we are the billing department. We may as well just be stuck away in a room somewhere else in the practice, like a lot of billing departments are, where you never see us, but the work gets done. And I can't unknow what I know. I am an auditor. I understand compliance. I understand the risks of not documenting appropriately or billing things inappropriately, whether they're documented or not. And so I can't not see that. And so they get more than just a billing company. They get more than just coders and billers. They get the, hey, you got all this in your note, but you didn't do anything. How do we describe what you actually did? How do we get from think to ink? And, you know, make sure that your documentation is there to support the work you're doing. Or I had, because a lot of them are still using templates, the bane of my existence. I have a love-hate relationship with EMR. But a lot of them are still using templates. And mm-hmm. patients were coming in with breathing difficulties. And I was getting the CPT code for a nebulizer treatment, but there were no medications. And the description that was being brought in was kind of didn't match the code that I was seeing. And so when I went back and inquired, they were just doing the training on how to use the new inhalers
Okay.
Wrong code. Mm-hmm. And oh, by the way, that one's included in your E&M service.
Right.
However, if you are actually doing a nebulizer treatment, this is the code to use. So, you know, giving that feedback so that they don't just continue to make the same mistakes over and over again, unintentionally, but nonetheless, the same mistakes over and over again that put them at risk. So that's kind of our mission as a company, is to provide the best revenue cycle process as possible with the education needed to make it better.
I love that mission. Love it. Yeah. So you're definitely right. There are many medical billing companies out there. You're absolutely right. But I love hearing that there are few and far between, and I do agree with you, few and far between, that have someone at the helm of that company who is qualified with that more comprehensive lens, right? They're able to give the providers a more comprehensive scope of what's going on in their rev cycle, right? And I love hearing that you provide that at your company, that you are definitely an auditor. And so you can assist with that process as well right away, right? Because you're already retained as their billing department. So you can also offer such a thing as those internal audits, right? And look under the hood from time to time, right?
Hearing
that.
If we're auditing something, it's not an intentional audit usually. It's a educational, something doesn't match up. And so we're going to dig into why and educate back. One thing that I do not offer to my billing clients, I'll do it for other people, but for my billing clients, I won't do their compliance audits.
Right.
Because I know that. I know them. I understand what their workflows are because I am their billing department. I'm not just some random people out there.
Right.
I get to know them so well that I feel like I cannot read their notes with a completely unbiased eye.
Well said. Absolutely correct. So you send them for external compliance reviews. That makes complete sense.
To doctors management, because I've worked with their staff. I understand the level of knowledge that the auditors there have. And that is absolutely my first recommendation. I know there are other great auditors out there and consultants, but that's always my first recommendation just because of the relationships that we have.
Exactly. Yeah. You touched upon several things that I want to piggyback off of. Absolutely correct. I want to remind the audience again that that's an incredibly valid point, that if we're too much on the inside, right, we have to be objective and guide our providers that it's okay, I'm going to refer you to this external compliance reviewer or consultant or company who's going to take a look at things with an unbiased eye, because I would be biased, right? If I was that one going back in again doing compliance work, that simply would not make sense. So I love hearing that. Completely agree with you there. Yeah, amazing. And absolutely, there are so many different external auditors that can be used in terms of compliance. We know between you and I, quite a few, right?
A good old handful of them.
A good old handful, right? A good old handful. We've met at conferences. We know personally. They've been on my podcast. So absolutely, there are plenty of connections that we have. And there's plenty of work for everybody, right?
Absolutely.
That was a really good point, is you can't just keep all the work for yourself and hoard it, especially when then you're interfacing with that inside bias that you have, right? You're not quite independent and objective in your views. And we have to maintain that independence at some point. So love hearing that. Love it, Pam. Amazing. Amazing. All right. Now, clearly, right, your mission, right, has been reflecting on appropriate reimbursement for physicians and providers. I loved hearing that point that you made, that when you're looking at their documentation and you see things that aren't quite captured appropriately, right? Or there was some erroneous code that was pulled in, like you had mentioned about the nebulizer treatment, which was in fact the education part of it instead. So I love hearing that you do provide that immediate attention to correction as well. So I love that. Are there any other best practice recommendations that you can highlight for the healthcare practices, you know, trying to do the right thing when you find some sort of an anomaly? I know I would love to hear some more of your inside facts there.
I think that my perspective, and I think you probably hear it, it all goes back to education from my perspective. Practices need to be open to the education. But you've got to be getting it from the right sources. You know, you and I both know that we could go out on forums, we can Google a question and we'll get out on a forum and there'll be opinions all over the place about if something's allowed or not allowed or how to code it. But nobody puts any authoritative source behind the comment. Well, I shouldn't say nobody. Rarely do we see that authoritative source. Well, just because another practice is doing something and getting paid for it doesn't mean it's compliant. And so the practices need to have that culture of compliance, as Sean Weiss says, that we're going to figure out the answer and make sure we're doing it correctly before we do it. And I think that from my perspective, that's, yes, patient care comes first. But to get paid for that patient care, we need to make sure that we understand the rules of how we should be getting paid. What is medically necessary? Can we bill all 20 of these codes together? Do they bundle into one procedure? You know, having that understanding. And I know that the providers don't go to school to be coders, but they absolutely cannot afford to go through their medical career not having some understanding of coding and the regulations that happen behind it, whether it's themselves personally or them hiring the right people. And so I think that, you know, you have to put all those pieces together, because if we miss any of it, then we're going to have bad documentation, bad outcomes, high risk, and it's going to cost more money than profit. So I just, all the pieces play together. I was recently talking about revenue cycle and all the pieces of the revenue cycle. Revenue cycle starts at that initial phone call when the patient first calls to make an appointment. And people don't recognize that value in making sure we have that information correct. On the other side of it, on the clinical side, they have to understand the value of understanding the compliance piece of it.
Wow. Pam, amazing, amazing insights. There are so many things in that, in all of those answers to that question that I can talk about. I mean, amazing. So compliance, right? We have to get our providers to, it's 2023, we have to embrace that culture of compliance. I know we've been saying that for years, and we celebrate those ones that have been embracing a culture of compliance as well as education proactively since 2008, 2009, as we stated earlier in the podcast. But absolutely correct is, you know, we have to get them to be aware of that because it's their name. Let's not forget, it is their name that all of this is under. So if anything goes wonky, if anything goes sideways, it is their name that's on the line. And so understanding those compliance regulations from either a government standpoint as well as a commercial payer standpoint are detrimental, right? If things go sideways and we don't help them follow policy and regulations to the T, right? Exactly. So Yeah, we do have Sean Weiss as the leader of our compliance, you know, helm here. We all look up to him. He's incredible, practically an attorney himself. But alas,
yes.
You know, we also, for all of our own clients that we serve, we implore them one by one by one, specialty by specialty by specialty, to understand their claims and understand their coordinating documentation. Because without, you know, it's a new era, 2023, right? So there's another whole conversation to be had on our new E&M guidelines, right? So all of this proactive education has to happen for 2023 as well, for all of the changes that are happening across the board for every specialty in the office and outpatient setting, as well as every single inpatient setting, the ER, the home and residence. I mean, all of it, every single specialty is being touched. So that's a huge educational feat that they have to overcome and take right now in 2023, because those codes have already taken effect and those guidelines are already here. And it's the end of January as we're recording this episode today. So yeah, there's a lot in terms of compliance that I agree with you. We have to implore to the providers that without embracing that compliance, it's only a matter of time before the auditors on the other side. Yes, we're the auditors who, you know, are your champions and we fight for you. But then there's the auditors on the other side, on the payer side, who are going to simply look at the volume of modifier 25, like you alluded to. They're simply going to look at that modifier 25 and tell their managers, tell their higher ups, hey, Dr. Smith has a lot of modifier 25s that we need to look at, right? So that's how they identify you as someone they want to dig into. And once they open up that can of worms, it could be a can of worms, right? If you don't have that education and compliance behind you and all of those modifier 25s, right? We can, Pam and I can happily support every single, you know, modifier 25 if it's documented appropriately. We can help defend that. But when it's not, there's a problem. And then that's when the clawbacks happen. But so, yeah, I totally love that. The main impression and takeaway that I'm receiving from you is that absolutely compliance and education are paramount, paramount. So those insights from you are key, right? So I know it's almost time for you to leave us today, but you know, in my last question for my first time guests, I tend to find the best question because I want to take the long view, right? Like, where am I going to see you, Pam, and your company, or just you personally, right? Where am I going to see you in the next 5 years?
That's a fun question, actually. I very intentionally only hire people that I've previously worked with within my company.
Okay, great.
Because I know them. I know their work ethics. I know their level of knowledge. And I trust them implicitly because I may have other people touching these accounts, but at the end of the day, these are my clients. And I want to make sure that all of the work that's being done is as if I was doing it myself. So by creating that culture within my organization, mm-hmm. I have people that can kind of duplicate me. And that has allowed, as the company has grown, to me to have more time to teach the E&M boot camp for NAMIS and the CPMA boot camp for NAMIS and to speak on the national circuit and to really do that education piece. I cannot see myself ever not touching the day-to-day, because when you get away from it, you know that saying, those who can do and those who can't teach. I don't want to be so far away from it that I can't anymore. Right. I want my teaching to be real life. This is what's happening now, how we handle the situation. So in 5 years, I hope that I'm teaching more, that I'm traveling a little bit more, speak on the speaker circuit now that we've started doing things in person again. And maybe working a few less hours a week.
Beautiful, Pam. Wow. I know you're going to be an amazing speaker on that teaching circuit in the next 5 years. Incredible, incredible things we're going to be seeing from you for sure. So I love hearing what's on your five-year plan. I love that. And I love that you also employ trusted people, right? That's also the key takeaway in our conversation today is you had touched on this in the beginning. There are so many billing companies out there that just hit the push button, right? Push, submit, submit, submit. And they don't really do that comprehensive research. So I love hearing that you employ people, like-minded people like yourself, who provide the full comprehensive attention to everything, 360. They look at everything. So I love hearing that. But yeah, I love your five-year plan. Love it. Travel more, absolutely, because bye-bye pandemic. I hope it doesn't come back to our shores again, right? I don't know if that's a guarantee, but yeah, we need to get back to more in-person things.
I agree.
Like you and I did in Savannah, Georgia at the NamUs conference. I mean, that was spectacular. Loved it.
Yes.
So yeah, I definitely would love to see you traveling around more and more and doing the education bit. So I think it's fantastic. Fantastic, Pam. Love it. Now, I don't know if everybody knows where to find you in my audience. So do you think I'd be able to share your LinkedIn information or if your company has a website, any other details I can include in my show notes?
Please feel free to include LinkedIn profile. I actually don't have a website because all of my clientele come through referrals. So
love it. So I will share the LinkedIn profile. That is perfect. I love it. I love it. Perfect, Pam. So before you leave us, is there anything that we missed in our conversation today that you would like to leave an impression on my audience?
I don't know that we missed anything, but I like where we started. Just because you've gone and gotten a credential doesn't mean you're going to get a coding job. Be open to getting a job in the industry and gaining that exposure and network and show your enthusiasm to learn. That will take you far. That is, I think, I know that's how I got where I am. I think it's fair to say that that's probably where most of the consultants that you see out here started is we didn't just walk into a coding job. we kind of took what came and put the effort in to educate ourselves and educate others that we have the knowledge.
Beautiful, Pam. Love those final thoughts from you. I can't wait to have you back on my podcast next time.
It's been so much fun. Thank you so much.
And now it's time for my best practice tips in Trusty Tip. So in today's compliance tip, I wanted to focus on the latest comparative billing report, or CBR, that's been issued on CMT, or chiropractic manipulative treatment of the spine. Now this is CBR number 202301. That's right, it is the very first CBR for the year for 2023. And of course, just a very friendly reminder that no, you're not having deja vu if you're one of my loyal fans. This was the very, very first CBR of 2022 that I discussed as well. And yep, I did talk about it way back in season 5. So clearly, in my opinion, we are still having lots of issues with these particular CMT services. Now, right now, during the end of January, as I'm recording this episode, CMS is going to be issuing a comparative billing report, or CBR, on rendering providers with specialty 35 for chiropractic that submitted their Medicare Part B claims for CMT services that they provided. Now, this particular CBR number 202301 focuses on the current procedural terminology that those particular CPT codes 98940, 98941, 98942, as well as the modifier AT, or A as in apple, T as in Tom, for acute treatment. Now, this particular CBR analysis was based on claims extracted from the integrated data repository using the latest version of claims available on November 14th, 2022. And the analysis includes both paid as well as unpaid claims with dates of service from July 1, 2021 through June 30th, 2022. Now, the 2021 Medicare Fee-for-Service Supplemental Improper Payment Data Report reflects, hope we're all sitting, an improper payment rate of 31.3% for chiropractic services, which represents over $161 million in improper payments. Now, the types of error that comprise the overall improper payment rate for Medicare Part B chiropractic services include a whopping 88.5% improper payment rate, which is attributed to insufficient documentation. No big confusion there, right? That's a huge number, 88.5%, as well as a smaller percentage of improper payment rate at 4.1% that was attributed to medical necessity errors. Now, after their review of and research into the improper payment rate, this particular CBR was created to analyze the possible threat to the Medicare Trust Fund associated with chiropractic services, as well as the modifier AT. Again, that's A as in apple, T as in Tom. Now, the expectation is that providers who provide chiropractic services will maintain proper documentation for patient care, as well as confirm correct coding processes. Now, the criteria for receiving this particular CBR are that a provider, number one, is significantly higher compared to either peer group or national percentages in any of the three metric calculations, which means they have to be greater than or equal to the 90th percentile. And number two, they have to have had at least 60 total beneficiaries with paid claims submitted for these types of CMT services of the spine. And finally, third, they had to have had at least $20,000 in total allowed charges for their CMT services of the spine. Now, why don't we dive into the specifics of why there's a huge issue here, right? What is modifier AT? Again, that's A as in apple, T as in Tom. What is that? Now, modifier AT is defined in our HCPCS manual 2023, right? And as I'm reading what the definition is, let me tell you, it is, quote, append this modifier with specific chiropractic manipulative treatment, or CMT, spinal codes when the provider performs treatment of the acute or chronic spinal subluxation, end quote. Now, this explanation for modifier AT in our HCPCS 2023 manual continues on and reads, quote, the provider uses the modifier AT with chiropractic manipulative treatment codes such as 98940 through 98942 to indicate the acute or active nature of treatment. The patient's medical records should also support the active nature of chiropractic treatment in that the record should reflect the anticipated result of the chiropractic manipulation is either an improvement in or a complete arrest of the progression of the patient's condition, end quote. Now, our HCPCS book continues on and further provides that there are some tips, right, which are not outlined. These tips are not outlined in the CBR letter that you will receive. So let me disclose to you what the tip is. this is my bonus tip. This is the HCPCS tip as well. Okay. And it reads, quote, this modifier is not applicable when the medical records suggest that the provider is performing a maintenance chiropractic service to maintain or further prevent deterioration of a chronic condition, end quote. So again, that AT modifier is being misused for services that are considered maintenance versus active or acute treatment. So keep that in mind as well when patients are being treated. Now, let's move on and let's dive into the CPT codes at issue in this particular CBR, right? So what is CPT code 98940? That's defined as the chiropractic manipulative treatment, CMT, spinal, 1 to 2 regions. What are those two regions, you ask? The cervical and the thoracic regions of the spine. Let's move on to CPT code 98941. That is for chiropractic manipulative treatment, CMT, spinal, 3 to 4 regions. What are those regions? Those would include the cervical and thoracic, as well as the lumbar and pelvic regions of the spine. And then finally, CPT code 98942 is defined as chiropractic manipulative treatment, CMT, spinal, 5 regions. What are those 5 regions? Cervical, thoracic, lumbar, pelvic, and then finally, sacral. Now the metrics, right? This particular report is definitely an analysis of the following metrics. Number one, the average allowed services per patient. Number two, the percentage of allowed services of CMT, services of the spine, that are billed with, in particular, they want to hone in on CPT code 98942, as well as finally, third, the percentage of claims that are submitted with that modifier AT. All right, now the CBR 202301 summarizes statistics for services with dates of service from July 1st, 2021 through June 30th, 2022. Now, the CBR discloses that there are 43,790 rendering providers nationwide that have submitted claims for CMT services of the spine. Now, the total allowed charges for these claims were over $677 million during the analysis timeframe. And remember that those CMT services of the spine vulnerability include that, according to that 2021 Medicare fee-for-service supplemental improper payment data report, right? They disclosed an improper payment rate of 31.3% for chiropractic services, which represents over $161 million in improper payments, right? And again, they break that down further, that 88.5% of this improper payment rate is due to insufficient documentation. And 4.1% of this improper payment rate is due to medical necessity errors. So of course, CBR outlines the desired behavior for CMT services of the spine, right? Which is of course fourfold. Number one, we have to protect the Medicare Trust Fund. Number two, we have to increase providers' awareness about CMT spine services. Number three, we have to support our providers' internal compliance processes. And finally, fourth, we have to provide coding guidelines and requirements in this CBR to help our providers out. Now, it's critical to understand that a CBR does not indicate that you are going to get an official audit. Although, please be mindful, I hope you can hear me smiling because I've said this on every single CBR episode I've given over these past 2 years. Please take that advice with plenty and plenty of grains of salt because this phrase is coming directly from the MACs that issue the CBRs, right? So more directly, consider this CBR to be your notice. It is definitely your warning that you are being looked at closely. Now, the value of the CBR to our providers is that it definitely does serve as a tool to look at your billing patterns as compared to your peers in your state as well as across the country. Now, the value also includes the facts that specific coding guidelines and billing information will be detailed. Now, the CBR informs providers whose billing patterns differ from those of their peers. Now, of course, the desired behavior here is to is to capture proper and compliant documentation for these types of CMT services of the spine, right? But has that been working? Because like I said early in this trusty tip, we were issued a CBR last year in 2022 and again now. And these numbers are still way too high of an error rate, in my opinion, right? Again, 88.5% of this improper payment data is due to insufficient documentation. And 4.1% of this improper payment rate data is due to medical necessity errors. So just for fun, I thought I would take a look back at 2022. Look at that data again. Look at my podcast from a year ago. What does the CBR letter state? So let's go back in time, right? That CBR number 202201 back then, what did it say? It said that there is a 33.7% improper payment rate for chiropractic services. So that's not too far off from our 31.3% for this year in 2023. So that's negligible improvement, right? Negligible. So in 2022, it said it was a 33.7% improper payment rate for chiropractic services, which represented back then over $176 million in improper payment. Again, the number is not that far off. And then they break that down further to, again, a negligible amount of the improper payment rate attributed to insufficient documentation back then in 2022 was 86.8%. So again, 86.8% versus 88.5% this year. So it went in the wrong direction, right? It actually increased this year by that, whatever, 2% or so. So the numbers are way too high, right? And in that particular instance, it's going in the wrong direction. And in 2022, the attribution to the medical necessity error went to 8.6%. So at least we went down 4% points for the medical necessity errors, because this year in 2023, it's at 4.1%. So regardless, the errors are still there a full year later. So my best practice recommendations, right, always include to review those CPT codes to ensure correct code assignment, right? We should be performing regular internal reviews of documentation and code selection to ensure accuracy and compliance, because these two steps alone, in my opinion, can greatly reduce the possibility of future improper payments. And yet again, though, as I've said at least 15 times so far, insufficient documentation is the big killer here, right? So what documentation do I want to see when I audit for chiropractic services for those subluxations of the spine? Now, I want to see if there are any Medicare local coverage determinations or articles or national coverage determinations that may apply. And I also want to see that the documentation meets all those requirements for these services for every single CPT code addressed on the CBR, which is 98940, 98941, and 98942, as well as that pesky modifier AT. A is an apple, T is in Tom, right? So when you do that background research, did you know that there most certainly is an LCA, or a local coverage article, for chiropractic services? So let's go over some of those few key features that I think apply very, very nicely to honing in on your CBR and then digging into your own data and applying this LCA to yourself. So some of these key features include, for active treatment, again, with that appendage of modifier AT, your documentation needs to include facts like the patient must have a significant health problem in the form of a neuromusculoskeletal condition necessitating treatment, as well as the manipulation services rendered must have a direct therapeutic relationship to the patient's condition, as well as provide reasonable expectation of recovery or improvement of function. The patient must have a subluxation of the spine as demonstrated by an X-ray or a physical examination. Now, most spinal joint problems fall into these following categories, according to this LCA. It can be an acute subluxation, which is defined as a patient's condition is considered acute when the patient is being treated for a new injury, identified by X-ray or physical examination as specified above. The result of chiropractic manipulation is expected to be an improvement in or an arrest of progression of the patient's condition. Or the spinal joint problem could fall into this category of chronic subluxation. What does that mean? That means a patient's condition is considered chronic when it is not expected to significantly improve or be resolved with further treatment, as is the case with an acute condition, right? So there's a difference there. But where the continued therapy can be expected to result in some functional improvement. Once the clinical status has remained stable for a given condition without expectation of additional objective clinical improvements, further manipulative treatment is considered maintenance therapy and is not covered. So we have to be mindful of the fine print, those details in those LCAs, right? And then they go on and say that an acute exacerbation is a temporary but marked deterioration of the patient's condition that is causing significant interference with activities of daily living due to an acute flare-up of the previously treated condition. The patient's clinical record must specify the date of occurrence, nature of the onset, or other pertinent factors that would support the medical necessity of treatment. As with an acute injury, treatment should result in an improvement or an arrest of the deterioration within a reasonable period of time. So this particular CBR should have all of us that are performing CMT services of the spine really, really, really buckle down and self-audit whether we received this particular CBR in the mail or not. It's a great time to dive deeper into your own data, help yourself, and help the Medicare Trust Fund at the same time. You should be paying attention to what you're sending out the door, right? Is it really in compliance? So I always recommend stay ahead of the curve and avoid receiving post-payment audits from the payers down the road. It's fundamental if you have Medicare as a payer to keep your eye on correct and compliant coding and billing practices and make sure that you are adhering to all of them. It's so important to make sure clinical documentation addresses and captures all of the indications for coverage and medical necessity, and you avoid the whopping 88.5% of this improper payment rate is being due to insufficient documentation, as well as the 4.1% of this improper payment rate due to medical necessity errors. So a better, smarter approach is one that's proactive and starts by painting a clear, rich, and vibrant medical picture the first time so your certified medical coder can then abstract codes with accuracy. And finally, I focus Season 8 Spark on creativity. I want this 8th season Spark to be filled with our world's thought leaders, writers, artists, philosophers, everyone who inspires the need for creativity in all we strive to do. So in this week's inspiring quote in Spark is from the one, the only Oprah Winfrey. Make visible what, without you, might perhaps never have been seen. So very true, right? I think this is an amazing quote that reminds us that without our unique lens, there would be no creativity. What is it that we see? What is it that we want to show others? Why do we want others to see from our unique perspective? I think this quote reminds us that we all have that inner drive, that hunger to share our visions, our creativity. We make our greatest impact by applying our creativity. I'm happy Oprah Winfrey's spark still burns brightly in all of us today. So that wraps up today's episode. And as always, I appreciate you all diving into today with me. If you want more information from me, please go ahead and follow me on LinkedIn. I'll leave links to everything in the show notes below. Please have an amazing week ahead in this very, very short month of February. and remember to carve out some time for yourselves to unwind and play, or just to be still. I know in my final fun note today, I have plenty and plenty of snow to play in here. It's the first big snow of the season that came a bit late, but I cherish it. The silence of snow is profound. If you've ever had the experience of walking in a snowfall or a snowstorm, or when those fresh snowflakes are simply falling from the sky, you know what I mean, right? It's completely captivating to be out in the world, but it's so very quiet, so very still. It's breathtaking. Anyways, you guys, I hope you guys get a chance to get out and enjoy time away from work, time away from the office, time away from driving in traffic. Find some time to quiet down. Thank you so much for listening in on today's very special episode, and I hope every week with me brings you closer to helping your providers paint a masterpiece. See you next Wednesday.